Good morning and welcome. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel and it is time for Final Draft. Final Draft every week is your opportunity to get some books, writing, some literary culture into your world. Maybe it's a chance to explore a book that you've been loving. Maybe it's a chance to discover something new. I hope today I give you a little bit of both. I have a fantastic new novel from Meg Mundell. Meg Mundell is an Aurelius Award-nominated author of speculative fiction, and her new novel, The Trespassers, is no exception. The Trespassers takes us to this sort of near-world scenario where the UK is racked by disease, and a boatload of people are escaping to try and find a new life in Australia. Everything is going fine until there is a murder on board and then people start to fall ill. And this is the tapestry into which Meg weaves an absolutely wonderful story that shows us both the very human and very large world view of what's going on in terms of the way we deal with superbugs, but the way we also deal with migration. I'm so excited to be sharing this conversation with you today on Final Draft. And it's going to be coming up. I have, as always, a few short messages, and then we'll be back with the books.
American alt-rock legends The Flaming Lips make their opera house debut over two nights this September. Celebrating 20 years since the release of their psych pop opus, The Soft Bulletin, the band, renowned as one of the greatest live acts in the world, will play their classic album in full alongside their greatest hits. Book now for The Flaming Lips, September 30 and October 1 at sydneyoperahouse.com. Sponsors of 2SER.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft, books, writing and literary culture. My name is Andrew Popel and I've got a new book for you. I am very happy to be joined on the line by Meg Mundell. Meg is a writer and academic. Her debut novel, Black Glass, garnered much acclaim, including an Aurelius shortlisting. And today she's joining me to discuss her latest, The Trespassers. Welcome, Meg. It's a pleasure to have you here on Final Draft.
Thanks, Andrew. It's nice to be here.
Now, I want to introduce people to The Trespassers because this book, it takes us on board the Steadfast. From across the UK, people have jealously guarded their clean bill of health in an effort to leave England's shores in search of work in Australia. The country is a biohazard of disease. Airports are locked down and radical groups would have the borders shut. On board the ship, though, the days proceed with interminable regularity until a crew member is found murdered in the early dawn. The death is a grisly puzzle. For who would have the motive to kill? And then passengers begin falling ill. So safe to say, I feel like I might have freaked out a few people as I introduced that, because it feels really close. Like, we're one superbug away from this story, but we are firmly in the realm of speculative fiction here, at least at the time of recording.
I think so, but it is close. What I really like to do when I write is to make, I guess it's speculative, but I want to make it very, very close now, because that's where you get the interesting effect of the familiar and the strange side by side, and that can be thrilling and unsettling in a really interesting way, I think, for the reader and also for me as a writer. It's fun to write like that.
There is so much that is the familiar and the strange, and I feel like we'll come back to it, but I also have to note, in writing and talking and reading this book in Australia in the current political climate, I think the familiar yet strange would also be a discussion about people on a boat fleeing somewhere who are predominantly Anglo-Celtic. We have a tendency in this country to demonise people on boats, but we also have a way of othering them. This group of passengers are very close to the critics that we meet every day.
Yes, that was fairly deliberate. I mean, the three main characters, their ethnicity is never specified, but there are clues that you pick up throughout the book. Through, you know, I do mention tones of skin in different points. So the three main characters are easily read as being white, but the ship, all the people on the ship, it's a multicultural mix, which pretty much represents our world today. So, you know, we have a doctor who's black, he's of Afro-Caribbean extraction. We've got, you know, it's a it's pretty representative of the population. But you're absolutely right. This demonisation is a really interesting thing. And Australia has such a peculiar and conflicted relationship to outsiders, which is very, very weird if you think about it, because apart from the Indigenous people who have been here for tens of thousands of years, all of us, or our relatives, our close relatives, came here from elsewhere, and many of them came on ships and boats. So I've also drawn inspiration from the past. 200 years before the story takes place, another ship, a real ship called the Ticonderoga, set sail from Liverpool, where my characters live from, and headed to Melbourne, full of migrant workers. And things went horribly wrong in quite a similar way as they do in the story. So I guess I've tried to mash up history and now, and then to launch it slightly into the future.
One of the things that I found was so incredibly successful about this book, because, I mean, it's got to be a risk putting people on a death ship. It's got to be a risk, you know, skirting so close to issues that are both, as you say, familiar but strange. Is the way you tell this story through the three main characters, Cleary, Tom and Billy. I wondered if you could give us a brief introduction to them, because they make this book.
Oh, yes. So we've got the three characters, and as we're reading, we hop between their viewpoints. Each chapter is divided into three. So we're hopping in a fairly regular way between the three perspectives. We start with Cleary, who I think is really the heart of the book. He's 9 years old, almost 10, as he tells himself, and he's from Dublin. He's been deaf for 3 years because he caught a superbug that wiped out his hearing. So he's still adjusting to that and adjusting fairly well. He's a really smart kid, very watchful. He's a very good observer. And I love him. He's a wry little character. He's very brave, quite an anxious disposition, but I just really love him. I think he's gorgeous. He feels like a real person to me. So we see one third of this world is seen through a child's eyes. Billy is a woman in her late 20s. She's from Glasgow. I'm not going to try and do accents, but they all do have their speech patterns, which you might have noticed, Andrew, given your day job. Mm-hmm. And she is a bit of a tough nut, a bit of a loner, quite a strong person, and very practical, very pragmatic. And she's escaping a life of having worked in the hospital system in Glasgow, where plagues are rampant. And so she's survived the death wards and has left that job under mysterious circumstances that we find out about later. She and Cleary end up intersecting in an important way, a way that sort of holds the book together. And then there's Tom. He's from London. He's a school teacher in his early 30s. He's a fairly anxious character, quite a gentle sort of person. A lot of self-doubt going on with Tom. He's not sure if he's in the right profession. He's not sure what he's going to do with his future. He's relying on his prescription medication a little bit too heavily. But he comes into his own through the journey and finds a reason to stick around. He's from quite a posh family, actually, but things collapsed economically, and so he's now finds himself, you know, working alongside people who are more of the working class.
And in each of these characters on their own, we have, I guess, the makings of an unreliable narrator, and almost the way you triangulate their points of view allowed the story to emerge and emerge in this incredibly personal way. But I'd also be remiss if I didn't note that the world of a ship on the ocean is a really, it's an interesting set to cast your action. As we watch Tom struggle to find privacy to tryst with a crew member, it seems this unbearably close space. But we also see Cleary that he must mark corridors so as to remember his way and remember safe passage. To a child, it's an expanse. What did this space and what did these limitations mean for the story that you wanted to create?
Well, it was an opportunity to have an imagined pressure cooker environment, because of course when you're at sea, when you're out in the open sea, there's no escape. You can't escape the people around you, or not for long anyway. You're going to bump into each other again. So that created opportunities for people's paths to cross just as they're going about their daily business, which is very handy for, mechanism for a writer. I'm glad that you picked that up about the ship, that it feels cramped and there's a lack of privacy, but it also feels a bit like a maze or a labyrinth. And I did something really fun and interesting when I was writing the ship. I got a friend of mine who's actually a therapist and also a very talented novelist, John Bauer. He wrote a book called Rocks in the Valley a few years back. He hypnotized me, and we explored the ship while I was under hypnosis. It was an experiment to see, you know, how I could envisage this weird space and tap into, I guess, a perspective that allows for a bit more creativity. So some of my writing of the ship came from that experience of being hypnotized and wandering its corridors and feeling sort of lost and oppressed and like I was caught in a labyrinth.
You are tuned in to Final Draft on 2SER 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel, and I am chatting with Meg Mundell about her new novel, The Trespassers. Before we get back to discover more about this high seas near future adventure, I want to share a track with you. This is new from Hannah Blackburn, and it's called Tiny Car.
Tiny car, we drove down to Labour Writing Academy is the writing school inside Australia's leading independent publisher, Allen & Unwin. They help people get started writing and stay the distance, and their courses are run by publishing experts. If you're writing a novel, non-fiction, or setting out on your own writing career, the Faber Writing Academy can help. Visit faberwritingacademy.com.au to find out more. 2SER sponsors.
Welcome. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. Now, my name is Andrew Popel, and the show you are listening to is Final Draft. It is books, writing, and literary culture. But just there, we had a track. It was new from Hannah Blackburn, and it was called Tiny Car. So right now in the show, we're going to continue my conversation with Meg Mundell. Meg is an Aurelius Award-nominated author, and her latest is The Trespassers, involving this sort of near-future speculative scenario. We are on a boat that is escaping the UK for a new life in Australia. They are escaping outbreak, but there has been a murder on the boat, and it is really involving us in some interesting moral questions. The banality of evil, that was a phrase that frequently came to mind as I read. And at each stage of the book, I felt like we were confronted with actors who were more concerned with self than their interest in a sort of a greater good. So I'm not going to go into spoilers here, even though it sounds like I might. But we have things like everything from the families that reject Cleary at certain stages, the doctor who's more ready to mansplain everything than just sort of muck in and get the job done, all the way up to the hierarchies that only act out of personal expediency. The experience is pervasive, and I guess we do see this in our everyday, but I wondered what you saw as you crafted your story, a way we might break from this pattern. Did you ever see a turn you could take that might make people more open?
Absolutely, and that comes in the love and the care that develops between the main characters. And I guess that I wanted to emphasise that contrast, that while people can act out of fear, as they do when they withdraw from Cleary, they are afraid that they're going to catch something from him, they can also act out of love and out of empathy and compassion and just human connection and kindness. So Cleary finds that in Billy. He throws himself on her mercy. And although she has little to no experience with children, the relationship that develops between them is in stark contrast to some of the more selfish and venal motivations in the book. And I should say, like, the overarching evil here is not just people doing bad things, but the treatment of people as units of potential profit. Mm. And when their potential to generate profit disappears, their value disappears. And I was very interested in that because we see that playing out, you know, in workplaces. We see that playing out in migration policy. We see that playing out in so many of our society. So that evil, you know, is about valuing people for their utilitarian value, if you like, what they can generate in terms of profits.
I was really interested in the way you juxtaposed exactly that sort of evil of commodification against this tight little sort of trio. They're not a family in the conventional sense, because Tom and Billy actually have very limited connection, but through Cleary they are. And this movement throughout the book, there are these movements between isolation and closeness. I've mentioned before how Cleary becomes isolated, but it felt like beyond even the sort of the political and social issues that you touch on, it was really the heart of The Trespassers, the way we can bring those personal moments together.
I think so, and I think it also manifests, hopefully, in Billy, who is press-ganged into caring for the sick, along with, you know, other passengers who are forced to do the job. While it's forced upon them, there is still a tenderness and a kindness and a caring in that grueling work. I mean, at one point, Tom finds himself embarrassed because he remembers that Billy, when he was really sick, was catching his vomit in a bucket, you know, and you know, I don't know how nurses do it. They're incredible, incredible people. So they'd had this unwanted intimacy, you know, where she's been wiping people's asses. She's been cleaning up their vomit, but she's also been keeping them alive in a very fundamental way, struggling to do so anyway. So I guess it's about when you're thrown into a horrific situation, it's a real test of character. And what can emerge very often is absolute humanity and care and kindness.
Yeah, so Billy is a nurse, Tom is a teacher, and I assumed, but I had no way to confirm this, but they are, for my mind, I think two of just the most amazing professions that we can lay claim to as humanity. There must have been a reason you chose them to be your point of views.
Well, I guess as the other doctor, the second doctor, reminds Billy, she's not actually a nurse. She's a I guess a nurse's aide or in the hospital orderly, you know, we might call them. So there's that status kind of battle going on with him. He's a bit of a dickhead, Owen. But yes, I mean, back on the time, if I can bring it back to the historical shit that really inspired this story for me, on the Ticonderoga, the migrant workers were coming over to Victoria to rescue the wool clip. They were needed to work as domestic servants and in the wool industry, because half of Victoria literally had run off to the goldfields. So on that ship, they brought their children along, and the children had lessons while they were at sea. So there was a teacher there, and of course there was a ship's doctor and a second ship's doctor. So those were almost ready-made professions, and what appealed to me about them is that they're connecting roles. You know, a doctor or a nurse is someone who tends to a great variety of people and must also deal with the families of the sick. And a teacher, likewise, Tom comes to protect the children under his care and try and distract them from the horror that's unfolding around them, and then must also deal with the parents. So they're really interesting, I guess, archetypes, in that they have these connections with a broad range of people that provide a lot of narrative fuel. Both my parents are teachers, so I'm kind of familiar with that world on a personal level. And I have a cousin who's a senior nurse who helped advise on some of the aspects of, you know, disease containment. But nursing is not something I could ever do. And ambulance attendants and nurses, and vets, I take all my hats off to them. I don't know how they do it. It's amazing.
Yeah. My mum's a nurse and my wife's a teacher, so I have the utmost respect. I think they're just two of the most amazing professions, and we're just lucky to have them.
Yeah, and two of the most undervalued and underpaid too, incidentally. But yeah, they're crucial. They're crucial roles.
So within this personal environment of the Steadfast, of the narrative of the book, you've woven in elements of this historical narrative. There are also more contemporary elements that readers will recognise. The book is a veritable piñata of issues around conservative governance and the sort of near future, I think, social collapse. I was interested, there's a subtle comment that I'm not going to repeat near the very end of the book. I can allude to it a bit if you need, but I really wondered, from what it showed me, whether you yourself had any definite ideas about the modern resonance of these issues and how you balanced your personal feelings with the narrative that you wanted to create.
Well, the story has to come first. It has to be a good story. It has to work for as many readers as possible. I don't write thinking of the ideal reader. I just write the story. I write at the service of the story. And so I'm very careful not to be didactic about my own beliefs. I hope that someone who has very different beliefs can also read this book and see echoes of their own experience, perhaps their own family histories at play within it, and through the characters get immersed in that. I do have fairly strong views on a lot of this stuff, but what I've tried to do is to, I guess, put the reader in the skin of different characters and perhaps wonder, well, what would I do, you know, in this situation? And to feel it rather than to intellectualise it, to do it through emotion rather than, you know, pure cognition, if there is any such thing. And I tried to just signal little images from our Australia's recent history and just plant them in the book as little recognition points so that if readers did care to make the connection, it was there for them to do so without being hammered over the head with it.
It is a completely emotional and engaging book. We're talking about The Trespassers from Meg Mundell. I've got Meg on the line. Meg, thank you so much for taking the time in a book like The Trespassers, where there is so much to discuss and engage with, but also so much you don't want to reveal to those yet to read it. You have done a beautiful job.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate you, you know, that you get the book, that you're interested in it, and that you made, you know, gave time to speak to me.
Sydney Fringe Festival is taking over Hurstville Plaza. Catch three nights of free comedy, theatre and live music at Fringeville from 6 p.m. on Friday 20th, Saturday 21st and Sunday 22nd of September. There'll be food trucks, a pop-up bar, light installations and free entertainment throughout the night. And of course, Hurstville Entertainment Centre will have plenty of other Fringe shows throughout September. Check out the What's On page at georgesriver.nsw.gov.au for the full list of events coming to you this month. Georges River Council sponsors 2SER.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. Now, this is final draft, but not for much longer. We're fast reaching the end of the show, and it's a chance for me to say thank you. Thank you very much to Meg Mundell. She brought us her new novel, The Trespassers, today. And I don't know if you're anything like me, but I love a little bit of speculative fiction because it is a chance to escape, but also think and remain in our world. And, you know, sometimes I come out feeling a little bit, oh my gosh. If you missed any of that conversation, or if you would actually like to discover a little bit more, it will be up on the podcast in just a couple of minutes with outtakes and extended content. The Great Conversations podcast from Final Draft is your chance to listen back on all of the writers that we feature every week. So wherever you get your pods, wherever you get your podcasts, be it on the Apple platform, be it on Spotify or any of the other great podcasting apps that you can find, it's a way to subscribe and get new Australian writing every week. My name is Andrew Popel. I think I forgot to mention that before, and it is a pleasure, as always, to join you every week. I am off. I'm going to be reading more books and bringing them back for you next week, the week after that, on the podcast. Please say hi wherever you find us. Vulture's Nest is coming up next, but I am going to leave you with a track, a little bit of whimsical wonder to get you to the vultures. This is from Frankie Cosmos, and it's called Did You Find? My name is Andrew Popel, and till next week's final draft, wish you happy reading. Bye now.